Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, episode 99. I am not Garnett Lee. He is lucky enough to be at DICE right now. I am Del Rio, the one behind the booth stepping in because, unfortunately, Jeff Cannata cannot be here today, too, because of a scheduling conflict with the play. But, episode 99 will be special. We have, from Joystick, Mr. Zav D'Amatos.
What's up?
Hey, what's up?
I don't know if I remember how to do this, guys.
Welcome back, sir.
It's been 7 days. Do I remember how to do
this? Hey, thanks for coming back. We love having you on. We also have the unfunny man, Christian Spicer.
I'm so happy to be here on episode 100, guys. This is going to be...
You didn't get the memo. This is 99.
I'm just glad to be back with Zav because he has to top himself.
So like, I burned the shit out of you, son.
You did so well, and now you have another 2 hours of just like reveling.
I was like, I'm out, and just like walked out and never came back. But,
Yeah, whatever.
And we also have Mr. Indie Jeff Mattis from Shaq News.
What's up, folks?
And we are rolling along. So what we're gonna do is Double Fine actually did something pretty interesting over the this week. Jeff Mattis got a news story here about it, so everybody knows what's going on, and then we're going to do a little discussion. So what's going on with that news, Jeff?
Yeah, well, so Double Fine, Tim Schafer's development company, has launched a Kickstarter campaign. And if you're not familiar with Kickstarter, it's a service that allows you to basically seek crowdfunding for your project. So the impetus for this was... they wanted to make an adventure game, realized that a lot of publishers these days kind of, you know, turn their nose up at that sort of genre. And so they threw it on Kickstarter. And so Tim Schafer and Ron Gilbert, both legends in the adventure gaming sphere, are making a new project called Adventure Game.
I hope it's called Adventure Gaming Sphere. That's what I was hoping.
That would be pretty cool.
Wait a minute. That's a sweet name. Okay, but the real story of that was already cool, but it took them 8 hours and 11 minutes to hit their goal of $400,000.
And it looks like, as of right now, before they hit the 24-hour mark, bear in mind this thing gets funded for can fund for 33 days. Mm-hmm. End of day one, they might hit $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're what are they at right now?
As of 2:30 on Thursday, they're at $946,071. So by the end of this episode, they could potentially hit that $1 million mark. So
we are going to recap that.
We're
going to
recap
episode.
It.
Exciting
it's
stuff.
It's like a telethon.
Yeah. And as a double bonus, what they're doing, they're filming this whole process of developing this game. Mm-hmm. So there will be footage and a documentary of sorts. So, you know, they claim even if, you know, the game doesn't work out or whatever, I would bet that it's going to work out just fine.
Yeah, if you haven't checked it out, go to shacknews.com. And Alice actually wrote up a really good article about it. And she actually threw in the video that they did where Schafer is actually... explaining what's going on and why they're doing it, and it's a pretty great video. Mm-hmm.
But how bad could this game be for people to be upset? I mean, are there because this is the definition of pre-ordering a game, right? I mean, where there's no trailer, screenshots. It's like buying a promise of two awesome people whose work you've loved and supported in the past, and fingers crossed, hoping they're going to make something else awesome again. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
And how bad does it force it to have awesome expect? Like, are you putting so much behind it, or is it forcing people to be like, no matter what game comes out?
Well, here's the
now, are you talking about in general, or are you talking about, you know, like Kickstarter in general, or this particular
project? This particular project. Well, Kickstarter, the projects, I feel like, range from all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, I think part of the reason this thing took off so much is, I mean, obviously, it's the name recognition.
Yeah.
Right. These guys have a reputation making these. I mean, Gilbert practically invented the genre, right? Way back in the day. So, you know, I don't know that you could have a better jumping off point than these two guys saying, hey, we're going to make a game. We've got a proven track record. If you like adventure games and you like our previous work.
Yeah.
It's sort of a no-brainer, in my opinion, you're a fan of it.
When Ron Gilbert joined Double Fine not too long ago, everyone was wondering, are they going to do another adventure game? Because that's what they did together. And I think that if they were to announce this game without this Kickstarter funding, there would already be high expectations. It is even higher now because people have a vested interest in it. You know, you are going to get – people are going to get this documentary if they've, if they've donated. They're going to get beta access. They're going to get a bunch of other bonus content. There's so many different bonus packages.
Yeah, I actually have a – let me run down real quick what it is. Run down a couple of them. $15 has over 12,000 backers right now. You get the game as soon as it's finished, all its awesome glory on Steam. You get exclusive access to the PC beta. And then access to the video series. So for $15, not much at all. You get the game and you get a bunch of cool extra content. For $30, you get the HD download of the documentary series, the game soundtrack, and you know everything else and above. And that has over 7,000 backers. And then it's crazy. It goes on from there. You know, you got 100 plus. You got over 2,000 backers. And all they're getting extra is a Double Fine Adventure poster.
Suitable for framing, though, suitable which is for different framing. Than the posters that you get. And you're like, well, I can't frame this.
And then for $250,
it's a star shape. Right?
Like, what is an unframeable? You take it, take it into Robin's brother. Like, I cannot frame that, sir. Take that poster.
The guy at Michael's just slaps you immediately as soon as you show him the poster.
So how many more studios do you think are going to try to do this? I mean, do you think this is something that's going to try to catch on? Or
we were talking about this in the car. I mean, Mattis, I mean, other companies have already used Kickstarter, and they haven't had as much success. Like, new companies have started this. There was the story of the guys who've worked on Halo 4. And,
right. So there's I just interviewed a guy, Kendall Davis, who is used to work at 343. He basically stopped working there to start a Kickstarter project for a project called The Last Sleeper that he's working on, which is basically like an iPad. Think of it as like a – it's a game, but it's like an interactive comic. Mm-hmm. So you're actually interacting with panels of the comic and moving the action forward that way and stuff. Anyway, he's got a huge number of really talented folks in the industry working on this game.
Not even in this industry.
Just in the entertainment industry in general. So like sound guy for Lord of the Rings is in there, and guys that have worked with James Cameron and worked on Iron Man and like all this stuff. Concept artists from all these big high-profile movies are all involved. And they did reach their funding goal. And it was much more modest than what Double Fine was looking for.
16 or 17,000.
How are all those guys getting paid? I mean, well, they have to be all invested then with back end interest, but they only need 16. Not the people going through Kickstarter, but like you know what I mean. Like these groups get these super talented. Are these just friends coming together?
It is a great place for just word of mouth. If you get people, if you're looking for $10,000 from people on Kickstarter and you make that funding, you have all those people who are going to get that product, who are now going to promote that product because they invested in you making it. So you have that word of mouth that kind of goes along with it, and then the product is completed and they could sell it.
Still sell,
and then, I mean, it's still a thing that's available. The thing with Double Fine that was rare was that they're offering this documentary only to the people who are backing it. I'm sure if the game ever comes out on like retail PC, because the game right now is only scheduled for PC release,
right,
they might do like a collector's edition thing. I mean, they're making so much money at this point. The sky's the limit. They said they could even put it on different platforms, add a new soundtrack to it, and all this other stuff that they're going to add to the game because they've made so much money.
Yeah, they're going to turn it into a shooter. No. all this stuff, it's going to be completely different. No, but that is really awesome. On a side, sort of tangential note, also Double Fine related, I just have to bring up Notch, a developer of Minecraft, has basically expressed interest in
Psychonauts 2.
Yes,
right?
Funding Psychonauts 2. There's sort of a back and forth little twist. Anyway, basically, Tim Schafer's confirmed that he and Notch are
having a lovely chat.
Pleasant discussion.
It was funny. He tweeted that he thought Notch was a hard negotiator because he's adamant that the game needs to be called Psycho Notch. That was the joke that he wrote. I thought it was really funny. Hey, real quick about that, the other Double Fine project, something that we broke at Joystick earlier today was that it is the number. It is the highest and fastest grossing funded project that Kickstarter has ever had in the history of Kickstarter, which launched in 2009. And it's also has the most backers of any project that's ever existed on Kickstarter, which is insane.
Right.
And the most a project has ever made on Kickstarter, I think, is $998,000. It's like a set of speakers for iPod or something. This hitting over $1 million is going to be huge. And it's going to be huge for Kickstarter, who makes 5% on this deal. So if they're not promoting the shit out of this to make this like $5-6 million, like they're crazy. It's going to be all over Kickstarter, I'm sure, for the next 33 days.
So what are the
I was just going to say it's going to open up more marketing opportunities for Kickstarter too, because I mean, they're big, as you know, considering what they do, But a project like this could really, really, I mean, you might
especially
see a lot more stuff.
Everybody's
like
talking
this.
About it in the press. Kickstarter's doing
yeah.
this.
Oh, yeah.
Blah, 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 so.
They're getting tons of free press because they just offer this service. It's going to be really huge for them.
And so that's what I'm wondering. Like, if you see other people kind of trying to jump on this bandwagon, anyone trying to, you know, okay, we can do it. What are the, and I don't know, maybe some of you do, like the downsides. If you try to do something on Kickstarter and you have a target of 50K and you don't make it,
then you don't get any money. And nobody gets charged any money. And actually, everybody who's...
And Kickstarter just takes a loss, or do you
no,
still have to
no,
give
no,
they
them?
Don't take
charge,
a loss because they're not doing any transactions. So here's what's going on with this Double Fine thing. It's up for 33 more days. So nobody's going to get charged. Even though you said, I'm going to pledge $10,000.
Sure.
It doesn't get taken off your bank account until it reaches its goal. And then it has to wait until the entire cycle is done with that goal, and then it charges everybody at the same time.
So as a person putting a project on Kickstarter, it's kind of risk-free for you, where as long as you wait, like if you need 50K to do something, and you put this project out there on Kickstarter, and then if you don't get it, as long as you haven't started spending money you think you were going to get, right. No harm, no foul.
Yeah,
right?
I think
right.
The only limitation is that you need to be a U.S. citizen.
Ha ha, yeah, boom.
Or you have to be a U.S. resident, I should say. So I could do it if I wanted to. The Stop Christian Spicer Forever campaign coming soon to Kickstarter.
Hitting the goal.
I'll hit that goal faster than Double Fine. No, but I think the thing that's great about it is they offer you this service, and if you hit your goal, then they charge you that 5%. If you don't make the goal, even if you're a dollar short, it just turns off. No one gets charged. They don't make any money. They don't charge you.
And
then it just becomes like a waste of time. I mean, you know, you're wasting time, but I mean, you're not really wasting any other investments. Or,
and as someone who's donating to it, as a donator, you're pretty much risk-free as well because you have the ability to yank your donation at any point if you decide, you know what? I really can't afford $10,000 to go have lunch with Tim Schafer.
I've actually supported a lot of like technology funding programs that are on Kickstarter. Like there was a handle for a camera that I bought and all this other stuff. I've never actually funded a game specifically. But I think this is going to open the floodgates to people just think, I have an idea, and then like a million. It's going to be like the iPhone store after the iPhone store got really huge. And like now there's 9 fart applications other than that 1 fart application. I think that's what's going to happen here. Mm-hmm. I don't know that like – I think it would be hilarious to see like EA. Like I think EA, we should do a Kickstarter. Like you're EA. Like if people see the EA brand on Kickstarter, I think people are going to laugh at that. Like it's really great that these indie studios are doing it. But I think that it'd be – I mean I don't know if that was kind of where you're going with
the question. Well, I wonder if this could become something then like Sundance is for film to some extent where – I mean it's a bad analogy off the top, but I'll explain – where, you know, you get funding to create this thing. And then, so if you get funding and you build this game, then what stops EA partners from coming in and being like, wow, this game has already made a profit. It's a great game. Let's distribute it in mass as like a large publisher.
Right.
It's kind of, so that'd be like a company buying a film at Sundance. It's already been made. It got a great reaction at Sundance. And now, you know, WB is going to come in and take it and, you know, make it go gangbusters or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it could be interesting to see. But on the flip side of that, I think it'll be interesting to see how many people jump to this. And like you're saying about fart apps and people support things and get really excited. And then the game comes out and totally underwhelms. And people feel like even for the mere $10 they put in, like this game is broken. Like I'm upset. Like what would it take to turn the tide where people then, you know, just lose faith and putting money up?
I wonder if there are people sort of related to that. I wonder if there are people who donate on Kickstarter and now think that they have sort of like an investor in a project rather than someone who's helping fund it. Like the difference being that they now have a say in like, no, you know, tighten up the graphics on level 3 or
let
some
me
shit.
Email Tim here real quick.
And that's why
I gave him $10. Me and him are boys.
That's why Kickstarter's so genius, though, is because they specifically set the program up so it was not a you are investing in a project. It is a I am giving you my money because I think this looks awesome and I would love to see it exist. And yeah, there's a little bonus that I get with it for donating. But it's not a – otherwise you turn it would turn into a, you know, publisher chum fest where like people are like, you know, all these – got all these games and it's just big publishers fighting over them and, you know, the average person gets lost in the shuffle, you know.
I haven't seen this in the game, but I have seen some technology things where it's like the highest – the highest funding amount is like $20,000, and they basically say like if you fund it at this level, you basically become an investor, or you can. I think there was a video series that said like you get exclusive rights to it, and I've never seen that in a game. Sort of going to your publishers, maybe trying to pick it up, such like a Sundance. I think that there are options in some products that allow investors or companies just to fund a giant portion of it and get exclusive rights to it. So that you might see that a little bit in games in the future.
Well, I just mean when this game, let's even take this Double Fine game. So it's met its funding. So they're able to release it and it won't cost them anything, right? Like they have this and then they have this game release. So then when this finished product is done, the Kickstarter program is complete. They've pulled in their money. Kickstarter's received their 5%. Now you have this finished product that they said is going to come out on Steam. At that point, what stops EA or Activision from coming over and saying, hey, Tim, you have this great game, and it's only on Steam right now. We want to put together a collector's edition and put it on Xbox 360, and we'll give you, you know, we'll buy it from you for $500,000, and in return, let us be the sole distributor for this product.
The response that they're getting from this, I wouldn't be surprised if there are already publishers talking to them about the future of what they're going to do next. hey, now we're paying attention. Now we want to spend money with you. I think that's what's going to happen with this too.
It's huge for visibility.
Yeah. It is huge for visibility. The question that I have, kind of interesting to the point that you're making, Christian, is Microsoft specifically, because they said that this could come out on other platforms now they've made so much money. Microsoft specifically requires that Xbox Live Arcade games have a publisher attached to it. So that's going to be interesting. If it does come in Xbox Live Arcade, it will have to have a publisher attached to it. It'll probably be Microsoft or maybe another company if it's going to be on PSN as well. Right. But, I mean, that's going to sort of – it will get to see that happening in real time. That's why I think that this documentary thing is going to be interesting.
Speaking of documentaries and Sundance, related note, and Kickstarter, Indie Game the Movie. I don't know if you guys heard of this, but that was Kickstarter funded and
picked up at Sundance.
Apparently, a fantastic movie. They're looking at
how much did they raise on that one?
I don't know what
was
what
$50,000 or something like that.
It wasn't. It wasn't anywhere near what the.
It was a big amount though for the time though. I remember seeing it was like a pretty big amount
and for a film it was pretty ambitious. But yeah, it focuses on. The Super Meat Boy guys, Edmund McMillan and Tommy Rafenis and Jonathan Blow, who did Braid, and Phil Fish, who did Fez, which is coming out this year. So,
fingers crossed for all involved.
Yeah. But they say even if you're not really into indie games, it's a great movie because of the human drama and the story of and the trials and tribulations and stuff.
I have it here. It was they were looking for $15,000 and they ended up making $23,000.
Right.
Okay. They just hit over their goal.
That's awesome. I'm so happy to be living in the future. You know what I mean? Like, this is 5 years. I think it's crazy is that 7 years ago, for sure, there are now people that 7 years ago, who knows what they were doing, that now today they never need to work again because they invented a game for a device that 12 years ago, no one except for maybe Steve Jobs knew was going to exist. Mm-hmm. And now there are people that are retired and making millions of dollars. There's Notch, who 20 years ago, a game like Minecraft never could have existed, and this is happening. And now there's Double Fine doing Kickstarter, which Kickstarter, I feel like in popular conscious, has been this year or 2011, 6 months or something. And now this is happening. It's so mind-boggling to think, what is next? People are all afraid, Activision is this big corporate greed, or THQ is hurting financially, games are going to be struggling. No, games are, this is awesome. It's like a new golden age, I feel like, in gaming and people being creative and doing whatever they want, and then now finding ways to make money on that. It's just like, I'm just like a nerd. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
So that sort of ties into some news that came out of DICE just recently, where there was a sort of a panel where analysts were talking about the state of video game publishers and whether or not the publishers were broken or the publishing model was broken in the video game industry. So you've got like on the one side, you have, analyst Michael Pachter. Yeah. OK, laugh. But he's basically saying that it is broken because you've got companies like THQ who can't be a successful business making $800 million in revenue. Like there's something very, very wrong with the way that the business is set up. On the other side, the counterpoint for the news story was Jesse DaVinci of EEDAR. And he was basically saying that, the standard publisher argument that, well, it lets you reach a much larger audience and a lot of these titles wouldn't have the success or the reach that they would were it not for these big publishers. But then he like cited Guitar Hero as an example of that. And while it is true that Guitar Hero, you know, saw a lot of success and became a hugely popular game, where the fuck is that now?
Yeah.
You know, like what happened to Guitar Hero? They killed the shit out of that thing. And
I'm waiting for Rock Revolution 2, guys. I don't know about you, but that Konami shit was air drums. Come on.
So do you think this Double Fine project on Kickstarter has any publishers worried about their futures? Or do you think that's just...
See, I think it's sort of an anomaly because you know, Schaefer and Gilbert and Double Fine and all the folks associated already have a rep. Like, all you would have to
the rep, sure. I mean, like, let's think of Respawn, the guys who, you know, come from Infinity Ward,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Imagine if they were to do it for their next title that they're working on. Like, hey, Kickstarter, we're creating this, you know, first-person shooter. We made Call of Duty. They would fucking make a lot of money, too. You do need that notoriety. You do need people to know you, and that actually does help.
But can you make an indie first-person shooter as good as you could make an indie adventure game or an indie, you know?
Well, does it need to be indie in the sense that it's small scale? Could Respawn raise $20 million.
That's the question I think that this is going to ask. They have 33 days left, and they're already almost at $1 million. I think last I just checked, they were almost at 990.
Yeah.
So I think that it's possible. I mean, it depends on what it's going to end off at. I think at the end of the day, because there's like 1,000 people who are going to get an autographed poster, they're going to be really upset that they didn't limit how many people are going to do that because all their hands are going to be cramped up.
The first guy you can read it clearly, the next guy just a line. it's like a yellow Sharpie. A
bunch of stamp. X's on it.
They're using some of the money to get a rubber stamp made. I think that's the thing. But I think it's not out of the realm of possibility. We didn't think that this would be possible. So who knows that if it's possible that you can fund an entire project, like, you know, or, you know, a level, like, episodic first-person shooter, like, Sin Episodes yep. type of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think that this proves that, you know, you have notoriety in a genre that was considered niche by today's standards. Mm-hmm. I think that it's possible if you were to try to do something mainstream with the guys who made Call of Duty, for example, it would be very possible.
Okay, so are you that guy on Twitter.com? Ask, what would it take for this developer direct presales to become the norm? With what we have so far, do you guys see, like, anything to where this could be?
I don't think it can. I think it's exciting and more might happen, but it was kind of like, I think this got mainstream enough, but Louis C.K. released his last special digitally through his website for $5, no DRM. You could do whatever you wanted with it. And he made millions and millions and millions, and he kept a blog about how much he made, and he gave it away to charity. And Nine Inch Nails in the music scene, you know, they release their pay what you want mm-hmm. kind of thing. And some people can do that.
Yeah.
Double Fine can do that. I can't release my next comedy special online for $5 and make millions in a day.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? And so I don't think it can be the norm until everyone, successful people, would people do this for, they make good games, but I don't think they have the fan passion, but like for Volition to come out and do that, everyone would be like, yeah, wait, what?
Yeah.
Or even Rocksteady, amazing games, but I don't know if they even have the, it's kind of like what we talked about before on a couple episodes ago where, you know, a game buy, like giving those people name recognition, where Rocksteady, right. pretty much all their games have crushed, but does it have enough brand awareness for people to be like, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about this philosophy is that you're giving the fans something extra that they actually want, and that is actually something they can't get, like a signed autograph from Schaefer.
Yeah, collector's items.
Yeah. And it's also making the community feel like part of the game that they're about to buy. So on that level, it's super cool to me. And it's also, everybody was talking last week about, you know, how do we bring down the prices of games? You know, the used market's killing everything. How do you save the publishers? And, you know, this could be the start of something special in that arena. But, you know, this could be also just a one-off. I mean, who knows if it's ever going to work again.
Part of the question that was asked on Twitter at the end of that was asking whether or not that this now kind of muddies the waters for really indie developers, guys who don't have the notoriety, who want to do Kickstarter projects. Does that hurt them at all?
I don't think so. I think it's a big enough net. I think that, you know, when a Kickstarter project comes along that people are interested in, you know, it'll find its immediate audience, and then that, you know, that'll proliferate depending on how appealing the project is. The Double Fine thing is an anomaly, I think. You know, I've seen a lot of the indie stuff that I follow is Kickstarter funded, or, you know, stuff that, you know, may or may not ever see the light of day, and they're looking for people that are interested in it. And I think there's a lot of value for indie developers there, because you do immediately engage your community and sort of develop a presence around the game, rather than the other, you know, angle, which is you get all the way to the point where you almost have a finished product, and then you put out a website and a trailer, and like you start hitting PR outlets and stuff, and it's a much faster burn. You may get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
So that's why
I think this documentary thing is an outstanding idea.
Oh, it is. It's great. Yeah. A lot of people are going to find it really interesting.
All right, let's hold these thoughts. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. Make sure your Kickstarter's rolling, and come back and fund us with your free download. On the other side, we're going to be talking some indie. Jeff's got a couple games. Christian beat Uncharted 3. We'll talk about that real quick. Zav was playing a little Skyrim with
the new mods.
Some new mods. And
some Rocksmith!
And I've been playing some Rocksmith. All that and more when we come back on the other side.
We Can Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from We Can Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
All right, I hope you guys are still hanging with us. As you know, this is Del Rio, not Garnett. Garnett and Cannata are gone, just so...
They're gone. They've left this
just
world.
In case you've come into this podcast a little late.
Jeff,
Thelma and Louise did the fuck out of here.
Jeff cannot be here.
Oh!
But
yeah, the unfunny continues.
It's a good thing you never added my name to that promo, by the way. You didn't have to.
It's a good thing the promo never got out. Anyways, let's get into some indie Jeff talk.
Yeah, so I'm going to carpet bomb you guys with a few indies today.
That seems rude.
Yeah, I know. Well... Some of them are full versions. I played some IGF demos for games that are going to be shown off at the Indie Games Festival GDC this year. But
was Fez there 9 times again this year?
No.
God, that game has been in development for 700 years.
It'll be out this year. It'll be out this year.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, it will.
It's ever-changing.
It will be.
They want to win 6 more IGF awards before they release it.
That may be true, but no, give Phil a break. He's
a good game. No, yeah. I want to fucking play it. That's why
I know, right? Yeah,
hurry up.
Okay, so the first one, and I'll just touch on this briefly, Dust Force. If you guys haven't played Dust Force and like ridiculously challenging and very well-made platformers.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so I just wanted to chime in and say that I also love Dust Force.
The music in that game is so awesome.
Yeah, that's... Of all the things that game does well, that's one of the best things.
Yeah.
I was so excited when Steam opened their Mac store. I thought that you'd see more of these games being Mac compatible. And I'm a little disappointed that they're not. I mean, my PC, I don't even have it anymore. I'm not even going to say I have a PC gaming rig because I don't. It's that old. And my Mac, every time I hear like games like this, I'm excited. And I don't know how hard it is for some of these indie devs to make that work on Steam, but if you're listening, and it's possible, I'd buy it.
Yes, please.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely quite a bit of interest. It all really boils down to a lot of the times, you know, it's two guys making a game, and they're like, well, where do we dedicate our time? That's not to say that you won't see a lot more of these Mac ports or versions of these games in the future. Okay, so demo-wise, IGF demo-wise, I'm playing an excellent sort of puzzle platformer strategy game called Gunpoint by a guy named Tom Francis.
Which is totally, you'd think it'd be a strategy game when its name is Gunpoint. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's like,
do you kill anybody? No guns. Mm-mm. It's a puzzle game.
That's right. Well, there is a guy. So you play a guy in a trench coat, fedora.
I thought you were going to say you play a gun. I was like, that's sweet.
You're like Megatron.
Find the perfect person to shoot you.
You just sit there until someone buys you.
Pick me up, big.
So each of the game's levels
this on Kickstarter,
is basically like a, they set you up with an office building. So you have to infiltrate this office building, steal the data, and escape. And there's like little optional objectives. The kicker is it kind of... And this is really sort of maybe a little bit of a stretch, but it really sort of reminded me of Beyond Castle Wolfenstein for that, like the Apple IIe, where you're looking at these like maps with rooms and you've got guys with patrol routes and you have to figure out timing, like how I'm going to get into there and get whatever I need and get out. It's sort of like that. There's a great cross-link mechanic. It's a device called a cross-link that allows you to flip a switch and then the level turns into a blueprint of the actual level where you can see how the lights are mapped to the switches and stuff. So
is it sort of like a cheaper Batman when you hit the X-ray?
Sort of,
function?
Yeah. It's all the perspective doesn't change. It's just the overlay is like an overlay that shows all the circuitry of the lights. So part of the gameplay mechanics involve like you need to get through a door that only guards can open and close because there's like a hand scanner next to it. So what you can do is rather than wait for a guard to open the door or figure out a way for him to open it, you can wire a light switch to the door. So when you flip the light switch, instead of turning the light on and off, it opens the door. So, and then it introduces like more.
In a warehouse with high security and crappy electrical wiring.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Is the AI pattern based or is it kind of fluid? Or can you watch and say, okay, guard one does this, guard two does this, and you kind of learn the pattern?
It's more B. Okay. The guards' patterns will change based on like if you shoot out a window or dive through a window and they hear it, they'll come up and investigate and start patrolling that hallway. If you shut off a light, they'll look and the hall that they're in goes dark. They'll look for a light switch and try to turn it on. So you have to be cognizant of each action you take is going to have some sort of reaction and how to sort of manipulate all those things together so that you can achieve your objectives.
So you're really fighting like mall cops rather than like special forces.
I think that I've seen a few tiers of enemies.
Paul Blart.
Oh, probably the best part too is you can tackle dudes and then with the left mouse button you hit them and it's a little slapping sound. So the guy's like, you dive on top of a guy and you're like, and then you jump off.
He's just that's pretty funny.
Yeah. So anyway, very good. IGF, it'll be there this year. And it looks like it's almost done content wise. He's going to add some more story and narrative stuff and polish and everything. But very fun, one to keep an eye on. I also played a demo for Vessel, which is a game by Strange Loop Games. It's a 2D platformer, but it uses this very cool liquid-based physics system for its puzzles. So very early on in the game, the protagonist gets this backpack that allows you to vacuum up water or shoot it out. You can create these little creatures called fluoros that are basically like automatons that are perform basic functionality, but they're really stupid, and they're made out of water.
Oh, is this the one where the guy wears the backpack like Super Mario from Mario Sunshine? It's like a vacuum where you could suck it up and then spit it out the water
It's like the very first tool that you get in that game. But yeah, eventually they introduce a whole bunch of other stuff. The game amounts to entering these big puzzle rooms that are sort of cyberpunk in design. There's like all these big machines. And you walk in, you're like, whoa, what the hell am I supposed to do here? And then figure out how to use liquid, fire, lava, all sorts of different liquid forms to...
Are you figuring out puzzles like in a portal sense, or is this more just...
I think it's like you're just opening doors and like you're trying to get through you're trying to progress by using all the mechanics that you learn.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's flipping switches and activating machines and stuff, and some things you can do, some things you have to, create automatons or fluoros to do for you. It's really neat. It's actually surprisingly complex. I mean, I just played the first couple of chapters of it, but... definitely cool. So keep an eye on it.
Do you have a cell emergence on that? I just want you to explain how that works.
Yes, cell emergence. I just started playing the other night.
Is that on the IGF? Is it part of the IGF at all?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It just actually came out today. Well, it came out on the 9th, whatever that day is.
Yeah.
It's a shooter, but it takes place in the world of Cellular Automata. Just a little side interest of note or note of interest is Sheldon Pacotti, who is the lead writer of Deus Ex, also wrote the story for the game and helped develop it and stuff. It's very, very cool. It's voxel based, and you basically enter these three-dimensional spaces with sort of abstract representations of membranes and cells and stuff like that, and infection will start to spread. And your first basic control mechanic is like it's like a shooter. You have a cursor and you can shoot. I can't even remember what you're technically shooting at them. It's like some sort of plasma. Gel or whatever, and it basically destroys the cancer and stuff. And you can spin around the environment in three dimensions and like move in three dimensions. And then eventually it starts introducing stuff like RTS mechanics, where you're building Bucky fibers, which are basically tubes that go from
my favorite kind of fibers,
fucking Bucky fibers,
from like where the antibodies are produced into the membrane, and so you're creating these snaking pathways so that when the infection comes in, they can help you sort of, you know, take out some of the stuff that's basically trying to consume.
So what you're saying is that it's fucking crazy. If you see a video for this game, it looks you have no idea what's going on.
Well, and yes, and picking it up for the first time, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, it clicks pretty quickly, and then you hit a wall where you're like right now I'm kind of struggling with the controls a little bit, I'll be honest. The way that it's set up is, you know, mouse movement, and WASD rotates the camera around the space. So, you know, it's like a cube. So you have six possible angles or so that you can look at the look at the space from. So you rotate to the top looking down, and all of a sudden you're, you know, sort of your cursor is sort of shooting down into the stuff, or you hit a button and you're on the side. And then on top of that, regardless of which camera mode you're in, you can hold the space bar, move the mouse, and then you're moving within three dimensions in that space. So
there's a demo on Shaq,
that hurts,
right?
It hurts my head thinking about it.
On Shaq, I know you guys have a demo there, so people can check it out.
The long and the short of it is it's a control scheme that I think will be very rewarding for people who take the time to master it. For people who, you know, are first jumping in, it could be pretty frustrating because there were a couple of times, you know, and I'm still fairly early in, where I was like, I know what I have to do. I just don't have the manual dexterity to figure out which camera position and like how to actually get my cursor in the right spot before.
You're kind of thinking in from like six dimensions, air quote, right? I mean, because you can turn it every way and then you can progress through the level in that direction.
It's a fully three-dimensional space.
I remember the first time I played Descent when I was a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
And that like warped. I was like, what? This isn't like Doom. I can go anywhere.
Right.
And that was mine. I mean, obviously, we've come a long way in gaming, and that kind of movement is more standard. But this seems like it's almost reintroducing a new movement language that gamers.
It is. Yeah. And that's how I felt. And that's sort of like there's a lot of stuff about the game that I really, really like. Visually, it's great. Conceptually, it's like, wow, this is kind of blowing my mind. But. And we'll see. Like I'm gonna play a bunch more of it and see how I settle into the controls and stuff. It's definitely worth checking out, though.
Speaking of plus one to dexterity, you've been playing Kingdoms of Amalur, right?
Kingdoms of Amalur:
The Reckoning.
Reckoning. Yep. And I'm having a lot of fun with it so far.
This is a little indie game too, right? It's gonna be indie game fest. Just a little game.
By 38.
Kurt Schilling developed it all by himself.
Oh, the baseball player is getting into gaming. Wow.
He did it while he was waiting on the bench.
The favorite thing about this game that I've seen so far is when you finally unlock the bloody sock from baseball.
The World Series.
Yes.
You now have the bloody sock. You will win Game Six or whatever game.
The foot stigmata. Yeah.
But this game I've yet to sit down with, and it's generally getting positive reviews and positive praise, but some is like super high, and then some I feel like dives into very nitpicky things, where one of the critiques I was reading was, if you just play it to play it, you'll have fun, but if you look for faults, you'll be sure to find them.
What?
And it's kind of like,
I think
who
wrote that?
Yeah.
It was you, buddy.
Damn it!
I hope you didn't remember.
Okay, so here's sort of the, I'm really enjoying it so far. The mixed bag stuff that you're talking about, I think probably has a lot to do with the presentation, because the environments are gorgeous. I mean, they're really, really nice. They're awesome to explore. Every time you enter a new area, you're like, wow, this is cool. The character models, on the other hand,
Very Fable-ish, like kind of giant arms and like small head. Like the proportions don't look totally accurate.
Well, it's weird because I think they look fine in game.
Uh-huh.
The cutscenes, which are, or the dialogue bits, which are also in engine, and they zoom in, and that's when you sort of notice that. Okay, yeah, there aren't quite as many cool textures on these models.
You got Oblivion face, the disease Oblivion face.
Yeah.
Or the Street Fighter legs.
Just bulging legs.
Do not talk any mess about Chun-Li Street Fighter legs.
I'm just saying those things are massive.
I mean, I don't think the World of Warcraft comparison is entirely fair. I think they look, the character models.
Who made one?
Oh, no, people are saying.
That was you again.
We're like, damn it. They're like, oh, you know.
It's like Alan Wake. I don't remember writing this. I'm going to find pieces of my review as I'm walking
home.
Which
explains your flashlight you've been carrying.
Exactly. It's my favorite gear.
So presentationally, like, I like it. I can understand how some people who are real, you know, graphics whores would be sort of you know, nitpicky about it. But yeah, that's, I don't really have any problem with that. The action in it is pretty damn good. The one button, the quote unquote one button combat that they're doing. I mean, granted, you can have two different, a primary and a secondary weapon, and then you've got, you can hold down a trigger and have like four different abilities mapped. So it's not just like, I got my sword equipped
and
that's it.
Fable 2 did that. Did you play Fable 2? Is it sort of similar to that?
It's similar, but it feels a lot better.
Yeah?
Like the action itself is much more rewarding and better. It's not supremely difficult, but it's very fun and it's very like...
And you're not getting tired of it where that was so cool, but they give you... And we'll get into it, but that was my problem, as has been talked about, with Uncharted, where I actually liked the combat, but there was just too much of it. I think if you reduced the enemies by 50%...
I'm having much more fun with the combat in this than I did with Uncharted, just because, you know, Uncharted is, the combat's been the same for three games.
Sure. Do you find the combat in Skyrim to be rewarding as a player?
Not particularly.
How about this game? Do you find this combat to be more rewarding?
Yes. Yeah, it's more fun.
Because it has an Elder Scrolls kind of like hint to this game, because, you know, Ken Rolston worked on this, and he was lead designer on Oblivion.
Well, and it does have a lot of those things, like, you know, a lot of skills and crafting and alchemy and blacksmithing and all this stuff that you can sort of tailor your character for. I mean, all in all, I think it does a very good job. It's probably one of the better combat systems in an RPG, specific to an RPG that I've played. I'm trying to think of one that I really liked better. And it's because it's action oriented. You know, there are stats behind the scenes, but really you're not seeing that as you play. There's a health meter, but that's about it. You're not seeing, actually, I don't even remember
how far
the numbers fly off the guys or not. I'm probably 6 or 7 hours in.
The major complaint I think people have about Skyrim is its story. Some people find that the writing to be pretty poor. Mm-hmm. How about the story in this game?
It's somewhere in the middle between Dungeon Siege 3, which I just
the
thought...
The movie? Which, Dungeon Siege?
No. Dungeon Siege 3, which I thought was like just way overwrought, you know, in terms of lore and all that crap. And I was just like, I don't care. Just get me to the next battle. This is a little bit less that way. There's still plenty of like, okay, you know, whatever, the shield of what, you know, and all these crazy names. But it's not, it seems to be doing a better job engaging me. And I it's really hard for me to put my finger on exactly why that is. The writing and the voice acting are both good. They're both strong. You don't get pulled out of it by, oh God, this is really annoying. And maybe that's part of it. They're also fairly brief. One thing I did notice about the dialogue sequences is that the choice that will further the story always appears at the top of your dialogue choices. So you can delve into other topics like, I want to know about this dude, or I want to know about the town of whatever, or I want to know about this sort of, and you can click all those and you'll get a little exposition, but...
I hope these are those good, or I mean,
no,
you make it sound like I just started.
I just hope that there is the town of whatever and the shield of what in this game.
Yeah,
both of these things to exist.
That's true of most fantasy.
That's true.
But end of the day, I think it seems to work pretty well. Like the combination of you know, the storytelling is not like, it doesn't get. It's there if you want it. You can dive into more lore. But really, if you just want to get, okay, where am I supposed to go next? What am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to kill? You can breeze through the dialogue pretty quickly. And it wasn't, you know, skip it or not. It's really not.
And that's how I felt about Uncharted. I know it's been talked about on this show before, but I kind of want to throw this out to you guys and also to the audience, where people complain about the combat and it was clunky or messy or not the best part of the game. And there definitely are times when I was playing towards the end where I'd walk into a kill room and just know, like, oh, crap, this is going to happen. But it wasn't the rooms or the experiences I disliked. I think it was just they lasted too long, where I feel like if they would have come in with half the enemies or a third of the enemies at the same room, same structure, and you kind of bang, 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 and then before you know it, you're out of there and progressing the story, it keeps things moving without creating a sticking point. And I haven't felt like that notion of it has been discussed. People say, oh, get rid of the combat. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if anyone in the audience or you guys agree that it was just too much or too overdone, and then leading me into maybe another point where being comfortable with the gamer that I am now, like knowing that Kingdom sounds awesome, Skyrim sounds awesome, I don't want to play them. Like, I want to play Uncharted, even right. though it has problems. I'm super excited about Darkness 2, which I haven't, I know it's out, but I haven't had time to play yet. And just, like, being comfortable with that, with those flaws, like, even towards the end of Uncharted, when I was like, oh, we're going to be another crappy killer room, here we go, knowing that, oh, I could be playing Skyrim right now. Well, no, I'm going to do this, even though it does annoy me. Like, this is what I want to do.
Was it the universe pushing you forward, the characters? Did you want to know what was happening next? Was it that story that was making you progress?
Were you just a masochist?
The flaws weren't bad enough to prevent me from playing. And it was. It was the story, the universe, and all the high points of the game make it worth tolerating those low points. Like, did you... Am I the lone thing that there were just too many enemies?
I loved Uncharted, but I've always thought, like Gears of War does this too... I feel like rather than make the battles more interesting by making the AI better, they've always just thrown more stuff at you.
Yeah.
Like, that's always what Uncharted's done. Like, the first game, the combat in that game had some problems. The second game, I adore the second game. A lot of people do. It still was, if you're playing on harder difficulty settings, it's just more guys.
Yeah.
It's not like playing Halo where, and people hate this comparison because people hate Halo apparently, but... The AI
it's
in Halo
not as good as GoldenEye.
Is adaptive. It's which I actually played Reloaded, and it's actually quite good. I hadn't played before, but it's adaptive. It adapts to what you're doing in the situations, and I don't feel like Uncharted does that at all. Gears of War doesn't do that either, really. There are some instances where you'll – because the environments are sometimes so cluttered and there's not enough room for the AI to figure out what to do that they tend to just run toward you. There are sections of Gears of War where it's sort of brilliant, where, you know, emergence holes open and you're sort of in the middle of this like waterfall and you're hiding behind something and things are opening around you, and it does work there really well. But when you get into these enclosed spaces and the AI doesn't have a lot of room to path around what you're doing, then there becomes a problem. And Uncharted is this. That's the biggest complaint with Uncharted, is that if there were less enemies, it would be more interesting and probably better for people. I would rather them limit those kill rooms and just give me more puzzles.
But see, because I like – that's the thing, though. I like the action for – and I understand it as a break in the game. I wouldn't want to play 10 hours of climbing a cliff in a puzzle or 4 hours of shimmying along a space. Like, I think those action breaks are important to make you want to go back into traversal or exploration or just a break in – a style of gameplay. It's like, now you're doing this, and it, you know, gets you excited for different reasons. I like the combat. I just think they need to tweak it. Whereas Batman, I know, Dave, you've been playing like that. I go walk into a kill room and I'm like, oh yeah.
Well, that's
like,
because the combat in that game is very unique and very good.
Yeah.
Whereas the melee combat in Uncharted is not very good at all.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess that's the point, is getting like still including a feature, but having it still be something that you're excited about. And if you still need, like in Batman, I don't get excited when I turn on my visor and do some I'm not like, oh yeah, investigating, but it wasn't done so much that I hated doing it. Mm-hmm. I feel like they balanced it better.
Well, I figured the new Batman for me just kind of killed it, because they put so many guys, the environment's so big and there's so many guys in there that don't really mean anything, that I jump down, I'm kicking the shit out of all these people. I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I'm getting in these epic fights, running down alleys, kicking the shit out of everybody, and I get done and I beat everybody up, and I'm like, well, there goes 20 minutes.
Yeah, and then you go
like,
into
there was
the
no reward,
and you exit the building and they've all respawned.
Yeah.
They all got up. So yeah, I mean, that's a problem, I think. Uncharted specifically, you talk about like, and there needs to be that break in the action from exploring stuff, but I think about like part of the thing, and this is going to be a comparison that doesn't really make a lot of sense, but part of the thing that I love about Skyrim is the exploration and discovering the world. And I think that might be sort of an issue with Uncharted, because we want to learn so much more about this universe, but it's such a linear story.
Everyone has the same experience in Uncharted 3.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing.
It's
I don't think linearity in a game is a bad thing. I just think that it's specifically an action game. I don't think that we need to break it up with so many fighting shooting sequences. As much as I'd like to do more puzzles and I'd like to learn more about the world and maybe give me some more options to do other things, but I mean, now I'm changing the complete design document.
Well, no, I mean, I agree with you, though. There's a lot of opportunity for them to do other things in that game. It just becomes like, if all you do is cut out 20-30% of the combat, you end up with a 3-hour game, you know, like
that's probably,
yeah, you know, I would agree, though, that the combat, they could get rid of a couple guys. I mean, you know,
I like linear games. I like games that give me a through thread that I follow. I am saying this right now. This is my crazy bold prediction, and I'll change it later, and you can make fun of me. You can make fun of me right now, but I am not going to buy Grand Theft Auto 5. I keep trying to fall in love with Grand Theft Auto games, and I can't. I don't like them going too far, but it's not. It's like being comfortable in my gamer skin. I like Uncharted. I go from here to here. I do that. I like Halo. I like games like that. Skyrim is intimidating. I don't have time for it. I get lost and I wander, and I don't like exploring. I wish Jeff Cannata was here, because I think the way it tells a story, the way he tells it, says it tells a story, is stupid. And it's just like, I'm trying to embrace that and being proud. Like, why as gamers do we have to be excited about everything? Like, that's air quote good.
I don't think. What I think that's the opposite. I think people are more cynical than of everything than at all. I mean, maybe it's different for us because we sit at a desk with Jeff Cannata, who loves loving things. Like,
but I wish. God, yeah, you know what I mean? I do wish he was here, because he loves loving things. Then you ask him if he finished it, and he didn't. And he's like, "Well, I got sick of L.A. Noire after the third act." Then you didn't love it.
I don't think he said that he liked it. I think he actually said that he didn't like it.
I think he said he loved the first three levels.
But when he talks about it, it's rare that we. It's so funny that I'm like poo-pooing on
him. He leaves himself clauses out.
He doesn't circle back to it. So it's like, oh, I just started playing Reckoning, and it is amazing. Yeah. It is so much fun. It's so much fun. 2 weeks later, how's Reckoning? What? So now I'm playing Darkness 2, and it's amazing.
Okay, but in all fairness, like, we all talk about games during the honeymoon period quite a bit. Like, you know, that's just what. You know, the nature of the
I'm sure that people are going to see in you know, the post to this, and like that we are talking about Uncharted again, they're like, oh, again, because that's the industry impression of, like, it's old news. The game is out. After a week, people don't want to hear about it anymore because there's new shit on the horizon, right?
What, Uncharted? Is that out?
It already came out. I don't know if you heard about it.
Nice.
But, and, like, Jeff's not here, so we can't really comment on what he's saying. But I think the thing that's interesting about what Naughty Dog's going to do next is The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Because it seems like they're going for that environment, like desolate, open, not open world, but desolate environment that's a lot more open potentially than the Uncharted series, but with that same sort of character arc that you've seen in Uncharted, and perhaps due to limited resources because it is essentially the apocalypse, I suppose. Possibly not
Chevy
a lot
truck,
of.
They should have been in a Chevy pickup, because then they could have just driven through. Super Bowl. The only apocalypse-proof truck. Oh my! I kind of want the apocalypse to happen just to see a Ford run down the street and be like, "You lied, Chevrolet."
All right. Let's wrap that up here. We're gonna take another quick break. This show is flying by. We still got lots to talk about. Zav still wants to talk a little bit about Skyrim and the mods he's playing with. We have some listener feedback stuff to get into. And then, you know, we have some other news and some more good stuff coming up. So stick around, and more to come on We Can Confirm on the other side. All right, and welcome back to Weekend Confirmed. Let's hop right over to Zav with some Skyrim talk.
I know people are sick of hearing about Skyrim because the game's been out for a long time now, but the creation kit was released, and now it's part of Steam Workshop if you have the PC version, which is actually, it's a second game to ever use Steam Workshop, which is awesome because basically what it does is it takes all the mods that have been created for the game and puts it into Steam and streams the mods into your game, so you don't have to, like, open folders and, like, copy all the stuff in and, like, do a
mods for the masses.
Yeah, and there's only one other game that's available on Steam Workshop, which is Team Fortress 2. The thing that's essentially a lot of the mods that are available now, the biggest ones are stuff that's been on SkyrimNexus.com for ages.
Right, right.
Stuff that I adore. Like, go to Skyrim Nexus and check out the stuff that's posted there. It's great. But I downloaded like 18 different mods, and some of them are just like changed little things. Some of them are huge. One of them changes the lighting system in the world, so it's more realistic lighting. Some of the stuff is just like armor kits that you can get. You know, you can download the, like the Lord of the Rings swords if you wanted and stuff like that. Like people like, and they, even Valve got in on it, and they created a mod for it that added the space sphere from Portal 2.
Oh, that's cool.
In the game, and like there's a part where you're walking through. I think it's near Whiterun or Riften. I'm not sure. And you see it crash from Earth. It like falls out of the sky and hits a little hut, and you go inside and it's been destroyed. The hut's been destroyed, and you go inside and you grab the space sphere, and it has all new audio from the space sphere that was in space. And it's pretty cool. Like, you can carry this object around. Originally, I thought people thought it was a companion that you can carry with you, but it's just like an item you can carry and bring it elsewhere. And he just talks constantly about space and all this other stuff. It's pretty funny. It's like totally breaks the Skyrim experience because there's this thing from another world.
Can you like throw him in your backpack to get him to shut up? Or
see, like, go pre-order Portal 3.
I don't know if you could pick him up as an item. It's possible you can pick up. I think you can pick him up as an item. But one thing that I think modders realize is that you can opening the system menu. They notice that there is something in the game called Portal 2 Quest. So it's possible that it's a quest item that you'll be able to use in the future. Like, no one's really said anything about it. You figure if they're working together, Valve and Bethesda, on this, that it's possible that more stuff's going to be added to it. That'd be pretty cool.
Could reinvent the fast travel system.
Yeah, and all this stuff was talked about. Well, actually, it's funny you mentioned that because all of this stuff was talked about during Todd Howard, who is the executive producer at Bethesda Game Studios. During his DICE 2012 keynote speech, talked about the creation kit, talked about Skyrim on PC, and actually said that the average game time, according to Steam statistics that Bethesda has seen, for Skyrim on PC, many millions of people have purchased it, is 75 hours.
That's ridiculous.
That's average.
That's the average.
Yeah. That means one
hours.
Guy played for a million and, joke, and no one else has played.
You know what? The joke that I wrote on Joystick was that there's one guy who's yet to turn off his computer since November 11th. Like, that's the one guy. Everyone else is like 2-3 hours. But then actually that post, all the comments are like, well, I'm at like 300 hours. I must be above average. And like all this, like people have been playing this game for hundreds and hundreds of hours. I mean, I sunk hundreds of like 175 hours into Oblivion. Mm-hmm. It's time
Do you like knowing that? Do you like like when you're done with the game, having that as one of the options? How long did it take me to beat? Because in reviews and previews, or I guess more so in reviews, you'll see that for like Darkness. Again, I'm kind of excited about the game, even though I haven't played it. But it's like, you know, you can beat it in 4 hours. Like, that's always something you see. Or people kind of brag about, well, I played this for 100 hours. Do you like knowing that, or would you rather not know?
Well, I mean, I actually do enjoy it. It comes to this whole point of it, part of what Todd Howard was talking about during his keynote is that games have the ability to do something that other art mediums don't, which is to give the user a feeling of pride. And there's a difference between, like, gamer shame, I think is what you're talking about. Like, oh, have I wasted my time?
Well, it's not even necessarily wasting, just knowing. I mean, do you want to know?
Yeah, I think in this case, people do want to know because this is a world that people actually feel like they're in and they're involved with. Now, if I played 100 hours of Uncharted 3, I'm not going to feel the same, I don't think.
Yeah, as much as, I mean, we've mentioned it on the show, as much as I personally don't like to think of like, oh, if a game's 5 hours, it's not worth money. Like, that's a thing you hear all the time. But like we were talking about like Uncharted, it would be 3 hours. Like, does the experience have to have a dollar to minute ratio? Like, it doesn't need to be equal if you have a good experience. Like a game like God of War 3, I think, was a pretty short game, but it was a great experience overall.
The one that I always go back to for this example are actually both Max Payne games, but specifically Max Payne 2, which was, you know, wall to wall, an awesome experience, but it was short as hell. And you know, I played through it a few times, you know, when it came out new, and I didn't regret buying it. I wasn't ever like, oh man, you know, like, I'd just be like, all right, time to go shoot some more fools again.
I think there's like almost a flip side to gamer shame too, and I think I kind of want to get back to that pride point, but where it's almost at some point it becomes gamer pride, where this is not an official achievement, but this is something that people boast about. Oh, I've been in playing Star Wars, I'm at 200 hours. Oh, you've only played 60 hours of Skyrim, I've played 300 hours, and you know, people are posting that and they're very proud of it. And
Well, this generation, due to the advancements in the internet, have brought this definition, or like broadened the definition of pride in the gaming industry because of things like achievements and trophies and, you know, posting on Twitter and Facebook. Raptor is a company that exists because of that gamer pride.
Yeah.
You want to tell people what you're doing. You want to tell people the accomplishments. And some of the examples that Todd Howard had during his keynote were a game that he says does this the best is Peggle. You play Peggle, you hit that last peg, it zooms in, it makes that really dramatic music, and then it starts playing an amazing score, and rainbows are shooting everywhere. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to play another fucking level. That was awesome. Like, I want to see that again. It hits you of like, okay, I've accomplished something. Another example he used is the Modern Warfare level up sound.
Oh, yeah.
He said he jokingly said that he attaches it to it's set up in his Outlook. So when he sends an email, that sound plays. So he feels like he accomplished something like that.
That's awesome.
That's something that I think is this industry does really well, especially in this generation. Because you can share that experience with other people. Like, you could tell your friends on the playground when you were in the NES era, oh, yeah, I beat that game in, like, 3 hours. Like, there's no proof to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, now there's the actual, like, accomplishment. There's the achievement. There's the trophy that proves your point and proves that you've done it. And people like doing that stuff. Like, that reason why I think Oblivion's horse armor and stuff like that never sold well, other than the fact that it was like super expensive and pointless, is because it's not a multiplayer game that people can see. It's your experience. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's
speaking of which, Bethesda, where's our free horse armor? Yeah. Skyrim? Come on.
So, I mean, there's stuff like that where it's like, you know, you think about World of Warcraft, there are epic mounts and there are this gear that people see, and it's like, it shows you, and like even Gears of War, you have the, Andrea talked about this last week,
yeah,
you have the rainbow colored Lancer. People know that you've accomplished that. So like there's that part of the pride of it. So
right.
I think,
I don't think it's any different than back in the day. I remember playing Mario, or, you know, there was numerous games that we'd go Contra. I don't know how many times I beat that game, or how many, if I think back on how many hours I actually spent on some of these games, I would probably feel worse about myself for that than doing one of these other games where it's actually something new. But I mean, back then, that's all we had. And I mean,
well, I had the other kind of thing happen once where, oh man, I don't remember what game I was playing, but I was so engrossed in this game. And
Barbie Horse Adventure.
It was actually the new My Little Ponies. I was bronying it up, playing with some ponies, and
And
I remember just thinking it was like intense, and it was a type of game that I'm now comfortable in my skin to admit that I like, linear, narrative-based game. And I I got to stop. I've been playing way too long, and I pulled up my time, and it was like 40 minutes. It's like, what?
Really?
Like, that's all. I mean, it was like an hour and a half or something, mm-hmm. but to me it felt like so. So I always like having the option of looking. I was asking you if you like knowing. I always like having that option, but I always think it's the other way where I'm like, wow, that's all I've played. This is too much. I can't handle any more of this.
Yeah. It's another issue, though, I think. If you feel gamer guilt, it's not because of the actual game playing. There's something that you feel that you should be doing that you're not doing, or something that you feel that you're not accomplishing that you should be doing that somehow you're saying games are taking away from.
No one ever attaches this to any other medium. Like, no one ever says, like, oh, I spent 3 hours watching a movie. Like, I'm never going to get, like, I've ruined my life.
You know, it's starting to happen to me with Netflix.
I was going
to
say, you see
TV
it now with
shows,
Netflix.
Because now all the TV shows are, it's like, I started watching a TV series, and I get to that point where I used to be with games. It's like, I could do one more level.
I just
now
finished like, every episode of Breaking Bad. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's funny that after the experience is over and you sit down and look at the time that's been spent, you forget the entertainment value that you've your accomplishment of having this entertainment value over that time span. I think like that's the thing that we kind of forget. It's like, oh, I spent 100 hours playing Oblivion. What's wrong with my life? But that was 100 hours that you enjoy. That was 100 hours of entertainment.
You don't do anything for 100 hours unless you enjoy doing it or you're getting a big check.
Big check, yeah.
Big check. That's exactly why.
Which is why I'm starting a Kickstarter to play Oblivion for 100 hours. Right. I'm going to combine
the two.
His
username is Big Check.
Because I don't enjoy it, because I hate Skyrim.
Only if you audio stream the whole playthrough, so you're like, God, this
Well, that's
sucks.
Only for $1,000 investment.
Okay,
or,
right. That's
donate.
A different tier.
Yeah, exactly.
For $100,000, you get the controller he threw at the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the another interesting thing that happened during this DICE keynote is that Todd Howard explained that every year at the end of the year, Bethesda has this game jam where they allow their designers to just create anything they want over the span of a week. And they can just, you know, present it to the company and have fun with it. Because this year Skyrim launched, the only stipulation was that they had to create something within Skyrim that wasn't already available in the game. So it's funny, like, they finished working on this huge epic game and then had to work on this epic game on their vacation. Right. But there were so many examples of things that people just thought of to put in the game as part of this game jam. Things like, you know, mountable dragons, epic mounts. There was, you know, new enemies that they added, like goblins and like fat giants and things like that. You know, combining magic effects to create new magic effects, stuff like that. Like things that Todd Howard actually said that there's, it may be something that people see, it may be something that people never see, but it actually does, because the creation kit is out there. Now that stuff is possible, that in the tools, it does tell the community, hey, these are things that work in the game. We've tried it ourselves. We created it with our tools. Now you have the tools. The mod scene on the PC is the most exciting part of playing Skyrim. I love Skyrim, but I love the fact that I'm playing on PC versus 360 and PS3, because it's never going to happen on those consoles, because there's so many moving parts and legacy issues of, like, does the console have this version or that? You know what I mean? Steam makes it really easy, the system they have set in place. I suppose that it would be, I mean, possible with PS3 because they have Steam integration with Portal, but it seems very unlikely.
It would also be a good testing ground for, you know, if you were going to release a Skyrim patch for 360 PS3 that, you know, provided some mod support, you'd want to pick like the best 6 mods or 12 mods or whatever.
Right, you can see their performance.
And make sure that they perform well and they're stable, and then you know.
Or even just a thinking ground for the next Elder Scrolls game, where do we want to have combining magic, like get into a Magicka type system of, you know, is that something that fits in this world and this universe we've created? Are mounts important, mm-hmm. Epic mounts important, or, you know, in this larger,
right,
you know, Elder Scrolls is very riveting. It takes place at the old folks' home, and you got to pick them up in a bus.
Where's my dragon shout? Just,
if you haven't watched the keynote, you can right now. It's online. You can watch it. And there was just like some really interesting stuff about, like, there was a question of why are the horses not more integrated into the gaming systems? Like, why can't you use the horse to fight, for example? And he talked about how originally,
because that horse ain't a My Little Pony, you know what I mean?
Well, originally he said that the horses may not have even been in the game at first, and then they added it into the game and realized that if they were to put more emphasis on what you could do with a horse in terms of fighting on the horse and all these other things, then it puts the horse back and throws the horse in the spotlight, and then people start to pick it apart, because once something is in the spotlight, they're like, that's when all the imperfections with it, like the horse getting stuck on geometry and things like that, it running away or freaking out or dying easily, all of those little problems become big problems if you make it an important part of the final game, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, there was a lot of really interesting stuff about design and, you know, this gameplay loop that we talk about here where you try to teach the player something and they learn it and it challenges them and they surprise them. So
they must have a pretty decent gameplay loop with 75 hours on average.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, and that game is huge already. People are still sinking hours. And with the mods on the PC scene, someone actually created a whole new island and a whole new town in a mod in Skyrim. Crazy
stuff. Now someone's building that whole new island. They need to add that now to their Minecraft replica of Oblivion or Skyrim that's also being made, along with the World of Warcraft replica being made in Minecraft. Crazy. Madness, I say.
Meta.
All right, so going on from there, Shadow 13th in the chatty thread, we can confirm, he was saying step into the gaming confessional. And, you know, he just actually threw this out for the chatty folks in the We Can Confirm thread, and I started reading it, and some of the answers were pretty good, and I thought, hey, this would be a good stuff for us to do.
So you're going
to
put us in the spotlight so people can start picking us apart? Like, why?
Sure.
Like many horses.
Yeah, does Christian's answer get stuck on geometry?
Welcome to the Weekend Confirm Firing Squad. Line up, gentlemen.
Gaming confessionals. So Shadow 13th says, first of all, list a game that is universally praised and adored that you just didn't like. You played it just like everyone else, ready to be swept away in the hoopla, but found yourself so disappointed that you had to keep your opinions to yourself or be publicly.
I can think of a perfect example where I couldn't keep my opinions to myself because I reviewed it for GamePro, and that's Just Cause 2, a game that everyone loves to defend, but I agree with Jeff Cannata, not a good game. Drives me crazy. I did not like that game at all. That game, it does something so... I mean, it takes all the crazy stuff that you get in Saints Row and tries to add a story that's kind of serious throughout until you get to the end when you're like, spoiler alert, the whole last sequence is you're like literally standing on top of a missile and you're jumping on missiles to kill this really fat emperor dude. It's so...
I had a lot of fun with that game, but I think I did two missions in that game.
I'm with Dave on this one. The sandbox part of it, when it was just like, oh, I'm going to jump in for 20 minutes and blow up a bunch of shit, it was fine.
But it's all like it's like, you can blow up a bunch of shit as long as that shit is red, and that shit, the red shit is what gets tracked. It's like, no, it's true. Not as interesting as like Saints Row. Or, you know, if it had systems in it like Bad Company 2 where anything can be destroyed, which you can do in Just Cause, but like there are particular zones and you get trapped. Like, I played that game for review and I got through a lot of it. I mean, I beat the game and I got through all this other extra stuff. And there are all these areas that I am at like 99% because I forgot to blow up one thing. And it's probably like a little fucking cone somewhere that I missed. It's like so silly. And like, there are three factions in the game and every faction uses the same one dude as they're like...
Well, and not only that, it's probably one of the worst in terms of writing and unintentionally racist dialogue.
It's pretty bad.
Give them credit by saying it's unintentionally racist.
I'll tell you this much.
Because it's so... It's not even... I don't know. I can't really speak to that 100%, Christian, in fairness.
You weren't in the room. Fun of this group now.
Yeah. So.
I will say, though, before people freak the fuck out, that there is no better feeling than flying a jet that you've tethered a car to a jet, flying the jet out in midair, jumping out of the jet and like blowing everything up. All of that shit is great. It's the world and the story that was just shit in that game. I'm really articulate today, by the way. I just didn't.
And
I'm,
shit.
I'm
was
like,
where you had me.
If I said the F word more times, I'd be channeling Jaffe here. I that was a game that people really had liked, and I reviewed it on GamePro, and I got a lot of hate mail because I didn't, and I like the game systems in it, and I gave it a pretty good review. I think it ended up getting 60, but I thought that overall that game was not as good as people like to think it was.
For you to have really channeled Jaffe, you would have needed to say the F word a lot, and then right before this episode is posted, you need to leave.
Oh, low blow.
To continue the thread of people hating me, there are several, and they're kind of flip flop. So I mentioned GTA 4, and people like, we get it, Christian. You don't like Rockstar games. I thank you for telling me that, because I am just now getting it. Like, it's taken me a while to accept it. I want to like them. I tried to like them. GTA 4 did not do it for me in this, because his second question, Shadow of the 13th, is a guilty pleasure. So a game that was slammed, blah, blah, blah. And I'm kind of on both sides of this. Twilight Princess is the one that praised, and I just didn't like. I didn't get into. And the flip side of that, and while not universally slammed, I loved Wind Waker. I really, really loved it. And it's not, you know, people like that game, but in terms of Zelda games, it got a lot of flack. And I think that was an interesting heads and tails of a coin for me, where I so loved Wind Waker and was so excited for Twilight Princess and played it. And everybody, it's great. It's the GameCube swan song, or it's fun on the Wii, showing that at the time Waggle could be cool until, you know, we got sick of it and Skyward Sword came out and said you could do it better with Plus. And it just fell flat. And another one is... Red Faction just never got in to that universe. And I feel like so many people loved them and were so sad that the universe is gone. And for me, I was kind of, cool, another game I don't need to worry about feeling guilty for not playing that everyone else loves.
Yeah, you're not as alone in that as you think, because that series is, you know, gone for a while.
I mean, were you one of the... I feel like a lot of people loved it, especially Armageddon, which
the newest one?
No, not the newest one. No one liked that one.
The
but like
Guerrilla,
everybody liked. And even before the FPS games, people seemed to really like back in the day.
Yeah, it was a popular series.
I just never cared.
I'm kind of with you on that, actually.
Yes, me going down together.
Yeah. One game that is sort of panned that I do really, really love is a PC game that a lot of people may not have even played called Cryostasis. I don't know if you've ever played this. It's from, I had to look it up, Action Forms.
Is it where Ted Williams' head is? Is it in Cryostasis?
I think that they're out of the Czech Republic. But it was a survival shooter, first-person game where you had to... You were going through this ship that you found like buried under ice in Antarctica, and it came out a couple years ago, and it's really hard on your PC, and it shouldn't be, because some of it looks really good and some of it looks really not good. And you find these dead bodies everywhere, and you can like jump into them, their souls, and relive the last moments of their lives, and then change things to like help them to help you in your present time. I'm fucking confused myself explaining this, to move environments around so you can get through the ship. And there's like guys that just like crawl out of nowhere and they try to kill you everywhere. It's like, it is a game that got bad reviews. I think it got like a Metacritic on it. I looked it up, is like 60, or actually it's low 50s. But I loved it. It was a game that I have a weird fascination with, like games like that, like Metro 2033. Some people, I think a lot of people really enjoy that game. Mm-hmm. I adore that game too. And I just, that Cryostasis is one of those games that people didn't really pay attention to that I really like.
Jeff, what was the game you had?
Okay, well, so on the one side of the coin, are we just doing the?
We were just doing the first side, but I mean,
sorry. Sorry.
Well,
I fucked it up.
See, for me, it's kind of weird because the games that were popping into my mind were games that were still critically, you know, well liked, but didn't perform very well. And that's not exactly what you're talking about. Like, I don't know that I can think of an example of a game that I really liked that was just...
No, but what's a game that you didn't like that everybody liked, right? That's
right,
the first
That's
question.
What Shadows...
Oh, so 13th. You talked about...
Okay. Well, okay. So I'm going to keep this short and sweet because I'm going to get totally destroyed.
By me.
By everyone here at this table, probably. I loved the first Metal Gear game on...
But
every game since then...
What?! Wait, when you say the first Metal Gear game, you mean Metal Gear Solid?
No, NES.
No.
NES?
I mean the NES style, like old school, you're running around, like top down.
Wait a minute, but are you talking about like the MSX, like original version, or the NES version that wasn't even made by Kojima?
Ooh, you know.
Snake's Revenge, that nonsense bullshit.
No, not that one.
Fuck that game.
Not that one. No.
No, okay.
No, the very first Metal Gear game.
Okay, so that one, yeah. So, no, you didn't.
And here's the thing, is I actually... Like the last one, Metal Gear 4.
Yeah.
I bought that when I got a PS3.
Of course you did, because it's a great game.
Played it. Played,
you loved it.
Played
you loved
like,
every minute of it.
Played like the first 2 hours, an hour and 20 minutes of which were cutscenes.
And then eight, and then you finished playing it because it was a great game.
Well, okay. And then I returned it. And then I bought it again, used, because I was like, dude, there's something I'm missing.
Because you were like, I'm wrong.
Yeah. You're
I'm
mad
a horrible person.
So anyway, long story short, I've tried to play that game probably half a dozen times I've started. And usually it's like I started, I play like the first 2 hours, and then I put it down for 3-4 months. And then I put it in again. I'm like, okay, what am I missing here? Like what? And I just, a lot of it is the story in the melodramatic voice acting.
I was gonna say, can you generalize like what you don't like about, is there a type of game then that embodies that another game could be like, oh, that's,
well, you like Assassin's Creed.
Here's the thing. I love stealth games. I love action games. All the components with the exception of mullets, I could probably like really get behind. But yeah, I just, for some reason that, and you know, I know what part of it is too, is the controls for that series are so different than other similar games of that ilk.
I would say that the controls of other games are different from that because that's the game that sort of started it.
Okay, you know, well, I mean? Either everyone else is doing it wrong or Metal Gear is doing it wrong for me, mm-hmm. because I am just always struggling with, like, X button crouches? Like, what the hell?
I will say, though, that everyone loves Snake Eater, and I love the Metal Gear Solid series, and I got to the boss, the end, and I never finished the game. I just, like, I got tired of the systems in that game. I was like, now you got to eat shit. Now you got to repair yourself. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
You have to
Sims?
Eat shit in that game?
Yeah, well, I think you might actually can. but it's like, what is this? The fucking Sims? Like, what? I just want to play some Metal Gear. I want to sneak in and like, knock some dudes
you
out.
You should play Peace Walker. Have you played?
I can't.
He's going to keep trying to get you to. I play GTA 5.
I'm like.
You play Peace
no,
Walker.
No, you play Red Dead.
I played Red Dead.
Oh, did you like Red Dead?
It's my favorite Rockstar game.
That he hated. Okay.
That he hated.
It, well, it's my favorite Rockstar game overall, I think. But anyway, that's another story. So yeah, Metal Gear. And in fact, if there's anyone out there that has anything that they think they could say to me that... Because some people, it just doesn't... The series
I'm sure they're going
to
say some stuff.
Are you excited about Rising then? Rising, Revengeance, Retaliated?
I would really like to love a Metal Gear game, and I just...
That's so different that it might get you... If you're kind
like
of okay with the universe.
In the traditional sense, that's not a Metal
but,
Gear.
No, right. But I want to understand, like, I want to understand why everyone's got such a boner for this series, because it always just seems
because we have souls.
It seemed like overwrought, you know, like just melodramatic, super crazy over
the
top.
But like, what game story that has a narrative really isn't like that?
Well, I mean, but it's, like, it was so like I
Gears of War.
I don't identify with any of those characters.
No, Gears of War is not up its own ass at all.
All right. Let's table this and let's have the listeners go and chime in on this. What's a game that, you know, let's Shadow 13th, let's keep this going on your gaming confessionals, everybody else. Jump in the thread on this week's show notes and let us know what a game that was universally praised that you just didn't like. And we'll go from there. And when we come back on the other side, we'll get into the games that are our guilty pleasures. We got a little bit of more news here, and then we'll wrap it up. Episode 99 is coming to a close, and we're right on the horizon of episode 100. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with some more Weekend Confirmed.
Jeff Cannata has to fly the coop.
Fly the coop. Fly the coop. Fly the coop. Fly the coop.
I have heard the people have requested.
Fly the coop. Fly the coop.
Absolutely.
Fly the coop.
Absolutely.
Fly the coop.
Finishing move.
Fly the coop.
Finishing move.
Fly the coop.
I can level it up for you another little bit. Absolutely.
Fly the coop.
That's sad. No, it's amazing. That's sad. No, it's amazing.
Early. Absolutely.
Early finishing move.
That's sad. That's sad.
Fly the coop.
No, it's amazing.
You're gonna finish early. Finishing move.
Fly the coop. Fly the coop. Fly the coop.
I can level it up for you another little bit. Absolutely. Finishing move.
Fly the coop.
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 Early finishing move. Rare for me. Rare for me.
All right, and here we go, the last segment of episode 99. Thanks for sticking around, everybody. At Rego asked, what gaming franchise would you like to see return that has been on a long hiatus?
I said this game, and I think Jeff Mattison on the other table shit himself when I said Anachronox.
Yeah, I'm all cleaned up now. Got the shorts changed.
Tom Hall's game that he designed when he was at Ion Storm, company that I think died a little too soon. They only actually released 5 games, 4 of which they actually developed in-house. But I love that game. It was broken. We were talking about it.
It was no
broken-ass Daikatana bullshit.
No.
It was an awesome game.
Yeah,
I loved it.
It was awesome. Unfortunately, it just never saw the marketing push or the support that it needed to see. But yeah, I mean, I would really, really funny, probably one of the, you know, most, I don't know, the funniest games written, I guess, in a long time,
uh-huh,
recent memory. So yeah, Anachronox.
So I just started the Kickstarter for it. If you want
right
to see it happen.
Never mind. Double Fine should do a Kickstarter to bring back Grim Fandango.
Grim Fandango
is an awesome series.
Day of the Tentacle.
Day of the Tentacle.
And or Full Throttle. I mean, any of those old... Like,
wasn't there a rumor a couple, maybe a year or two ago, that there was going to be a Full Throttle?
There was a rumor, but...
Or was that? Yeah, I distinctly remember Full Throttle in the news a couple years ago. But yeah, all of those games are awesome. And
yeah,
I think people have proven today that they want, or the last couple of days, they want some adventure games
but
back.
Do we? So I really liked the re-release and the up-resed or redrawn of some of those old adventure games. I think that's really
Island
cool. Monkey
stuff,
Island
yeah
was great.
Love those games.
I don't like the new ones. Well, not all new ones, but like Back to the Future, I was excited about, and some of the Telltale games that are still doing that. New Full Throttle scratch the itch? What pressure on Full Throttle?
But compare Full Throttle or Grim Fandango or Day of the Tentacle to the Telltale stuff.
Yeah,
like
Telltale
it's just,
has sort of a way of making their games, and all their games, although they're different franchises, sort of feel the same. Other than Jurassic Park, which was
just
basically a giant QTE.
Yeah,
I mean, it was an interactive movie at that point. It was like playing Dragon's Lair, and you were just like in Jurassic Park, and it was a good looking game and something new for them. But I think that all of their games sort of feel the same and have even the same kind of sheen to them. But these old adventure games, like they even the up-res version of Monkey Island or even the classic version still holds up. And those games like Deuce are unique in that sense, because it is, first of all, it's, you know, a great series, and they have all the narrative stuff is there. It pulls you in with, you know, great jokes and all the other systems that they've connected to it. I mean, those games are different, I think, from Telltale.
Well, and keep in mind, too, that, you know, Sam & Max, which Telltale co-opted, was, I mean, that wasn't a Schaefer thing, but that was
right.
That was an old-school LucasArts deal, you know, that.
But now it's very different now than it was back. I mean, now you can play it on the PlayStation controller and actually control characters.
Would these games need to be like that? Or, I mean, would it scratch that itch of full throttle done the same way, but just new story, new jokes?
Well, for me, it's sort of akin to saying, hey, you know, I mean, Douglas Adams is dead, but if he were alive and he wrote another book, would you want to read it? And I'd be like, fuck yes. Give me that, pre-order that right now. You know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
What if
that
the entire book was written in the first person?
And no? Shot things.
It's my FPS joke based on books, guys. How you
nice.
Now I'm the unfunny one. How's that working for you?
Welcome to the club, bro.
All right, sweet.
Turning the tables.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, mine is actually coming out this year. I'm super looking forward to SSX. Cannot believe we've had to wait this long for a new SSX game. So
some say making a new SSX has been pretty tricky.
Hey, you.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That's why you're the president of the club.
Founder and president.
And also a member.
So were you jazzed? Have you been riding the roller coaster of emotions with SSX from when it was Dude Bro SSX? Were you like, why? And now you're getting excited? Or have you just been like, I don't care what it is. Gimme, gimme, gimme.
The first one, the first trailer I saw with the paratrooper or whatever the hell that one, I was like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, let's go back to Tricky.
I don't remember it being that bad, but yeah.
Okay. It just looked weird. It didn't really look like an SSX game. And now I keep the more videos I'm watching now as they come out, I'm getting more and more excited. You know, that game just boils down to doing insane tricks, and the controls always felt
so fluid,
so good.
Yeah.
And I mean, even though I know I'm doing this ridiculous trick that would never be possible, it made me feel like, yeah, I could do this. I mean, come on, bro. I just had a monster. I'm fucking ripping. So, I'm a snowboarder, so like it's good.
I see a full body cast in Dave's future.
Not if he drinks a monster first.
That's true.
This game key. I would not want though with the Tony Hawk ride board or anything like that. Like that,
I wouldn't want
you kick flip it out of your fucking apartment.
And then I have to lay on.
I wouldn't want any game with that board. There is not.
I think no one did, and that's part of the problem. And that's
how
why
Dave get his head caught in the ceiling. I don't know.
I want new Soul Reaver. I love that universe. I think that was really fun.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back to that. And this is not necessarily a franchise, but games that I miss and love. Aladdin. And Lion King,
those SNES
Disney games, SNES and Genesis games, I really, really loved. And I don't know Aladdin 2 or whatever, but the teams that were making those, Capcom at points and different people, two different teams for actually both games on Genesis and Super NES, were so much fun. And I would love to see awesome movie tie-in games like that again. So it's not a franchise per se, but
one thing I'm excited for too is MechWarrior Online coming back. I know it's free to play.
Oh,
people
might
have a bad perception of what free play is, but that team, I can't remember what they're called exactly. There's a team that owns the licenses that bought a bunch of licenses back from Microsoft after the developer was closed down. I think they have Crimson Skies and they have Mech Assault. Or MechWarrior, sorry, and they may have purchased as well a game that I would love to see go back to the old Genesis SNES era, Shadowrun, the RPG Shadowrun, which I fucking love. Shadowrun, if you play it on SNES or if you play it on Genesis, are two different, totally different games. Great RPGs, and it went to first person. I think we talked a little bit of mess about it last couple weeks ago, a couple episodes ago, and people got mad or something. I was like, really? You're the three people who bought that game? So
That was a cross-platform.
The cross-platform first-person shooter. Like when they said they're bringing Shadowrun back, I had visions of playing those original games, like, and they were great cyberpunk RPG titles, and it turned it into a first-person shooter.
Well, and based on a pen and paper property.
Right.
So it's like you expect it to have that level of depth that, you know, you can't really distill. And
I mean, they could have slapped any name on that, it didn't really make a difference, but they use Shadowrun, and I would like to see that series go back to its roots.
That's what I think is scary about this. And Dave, I was kind of busting your balls about SSX, like the first debut trailer, and people got freaked out, and now it seems like they're doing things right. Like, we as fans want to see these properties come back. Or Zav, your joke, what if they made the book was an FPS? But then things happen like that, like XCOM, and like we're all right. all I want is a new XCOM game, and I'll be, oh fuck, I do not want a new XCOM game anymore.
But then they got that other XCOM game that is that
XCOM. That is the one you want. And that's where I feel like so I was trying to say for, you know, some of these old adventure games, I guess now with Kickstarter, they're proving that maybe it is viable to do it that route, but otherwise, are they going to try to take these properties and just Space Quest, now an FPS dual wielding with the power of the darkness tentacles, like tearing ass through space or whatever. And it's just.
That's the subtitle.
There's a fart joke in a Space Quest game.
On a side note, there's an indie company that just did free fan made. Tearing ass. No, free fan made VGA remakes of Space Quest 2 and Valhalla's Revenge. And then there's actually a completely original new Space Quest adventure that. Completely unlicensed.
It's like Phoenix Online Studios did King's Quest. They redid that. They continued King's Quest into a series called The Silver Lining too.
They're very similar. Yeah. So the new original one is called Valhalla Strikes Back. If you're interested in finding that, but from what I've seen, it's actually they did a pretty good job.
All right. So. And speaking of gaming franchises that have been on hiatus, Jeff, you have a little bit of news over there about some Twisted Metal, right?
Oh yeah. So. Mr. David Jaffe is leaving Eat, Sleep, Play.
Company he helped co-found.
Is that his last F-bomb that he's dropping is towards the company? I'm out!
Now, do you think the Twisted Metal people should be worried about this? Twisted Metal fans?
Oh, well, no. He's going to be sticking around.
Through March. Which isn't, that's soon. You know what I mean?
He says, mid-May is what he says.
Oh, the service contract is mid, I thought it was mid-March.
Well, it's an estimate, but so basically... He estimates roughly 1.5 to 3 months to stick around for balance and bug fixes to Twisted. So,
interesting thing about part of the story that Twisted fans might be interested in, no DLC planned at all, no sequel planned at all. It's really up to Sony now because they own that license. I mean, if the game is a huge success, I'm sure they'll do a sequel. But to think that the game's launching, I think this week... I can't really remember. Is it this week that it comes out? It comes out on Valentine's Day. Yeah. Sorry, it comes out on Valentine's Day. So, I mean... And to not have a multiplayer-focused game and not have DLC kind of planned is surprising, especially in this generation. So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not the game strikes a chord with gamers.
Now, as anybody I was never a huge Twisted Metal fan. I respected the series.
Metal Gear now.
No, I mean I know exactly. But do you guys? I mean, are you got any of you really big fans of the original?
I played a ton of it in college, but
it was one of those franchises. I didn't. Really own a PS1 when the PS1 came out. I was always late to the generations. So it was a game that I just never got into and never played all that much. I mean,
they had
PSP
killer
version,
strategy guides, though, if you read those.
Yeah, I read all the lore about Sweet Tooth.
Right.
And all of, so many. I think Stephen King wrote a book based on it.
Amazing,
I was never a series that really got me until I played the PSP version, which I thought was a great PSP game. It was like when the PSP launched, it was like one of the only PSP games
that
Lumines that was like really, really good. Mm-hmm. So good that they ended up porting the PSP game to the PS2 and it did pretty well.
Right.
So, but I played the demo and I was having trouble finding matches and stuff. So there were problems there, but it wasn't a game that it doesn't really appeal to me in terms of the genres that I like.
Has the magic of the arena vehicle-based shooter.
I've never liked an arena-based shooter, though.
And the magic for me in college was there'd be a bunch of us sitting in a dorm room, drinking beers, talking shit, playing each other. I mean, if I could find a couple friends and I can relive that magic, then
I feel like that magic, and I'm not calling you a dude bro, but that style of dude bro gaming where you're getting drunk with your friends or hanging out, pushing each other around,
slamming beers,
that Call of Duty has filled that space. It's a competitive, elite, major league game type game also, but it's also in a dorm room, shooting your buddies up and getting drunk and getting hammered. And I don't know if this game can go back and reclaim that space. And how weird did they have to announce? I know sometimes you announce things before you're ready to.
Yeah.
But the timing of this news from Jaffe, it's just I don't.
It doesn't. It for me, it really doesn't bode well for the release of the game.
Yeah.
You wait a couple weeks.
He did say that the company was co-founded by I think two other people, and he did say that it was just he realized that. Him and another co-founder just didn't have a similar vision of where the company was going to go and what games they were going to make in the future.
Right.
And also, you have to remember, he lives in San Diego, and the company's in Utah.
Yeah, directing these things remotely cannot be ideal.
Part of his response to or comment on this was that, directing a game this high profile from a distance like that is a pain in the ass. So what he's doing now is starting a new company in San Diego, where he's based out of, And he says he doesn't know what kind of game they're going to work on. I mean, they could work on browser games. They could work on a huge AAA franchise. There's a lot of speculation of what it could be.
He does say he insists he has zero plans to make games like Farmville and Angry Birds. So there's that. But then he says never say never. So you never know.
But still,
this is the guy who told us flat out a couple years ago, no, Twisted Metal is not in development, before he drove Sweet Tooth's car onto the stage and was like, by the way, Twisted Metal, kind of in development.
Right.
Just wait 3 weeks, though. That's my only thing.
Yeah, I know. Give it a little space.
Like, yeah. Let your game come out.
I mean, do you think this is going to have an impact on like the sales?
Like, Jaffa left the company. Do you think it really matters?
I don't think the average gamer cares a fuck about Twisted Metal, to be perfectly honest. And I think the people that do care about it are upset by this. I think
the people who plan on buying Twisted Metal could care less if he's leaving or not. I mean, I think if you're the type of gamer who's looking forward to Twisted Metal.
Right. And the game is done, and he's enthusiastic about it. He says that he loves it. He's always talking about it, constantly tweeting about it, sometimes getting in trouble about some of the stuff he says. But, I mean, like, if people are looking for a game that was created with him as a part of it, he was certainly a part of the game being created. So him leaving after the game is about to come out, I don't think really matters.
Right, and the
timing,
reason,
though, is
the odd. Reason why he's leaving, too, makes sense. I mean, if... You know, it's not like he's leaving because they didn't pay him enough money or because...
Yeah. Or Zav made fun of him the last time he was on.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure that did it.
I don't think that I ever... I think I wouldn't remember if I made fun of David Jaffe. Because my face would have been caved in after he punched me.
Probably true.
What did you get over there on the news, or Jeff?
Okay, well, here's an interesting item. So you guys know Jetpack Joyride?
Yes.
Which was originally Machine Gun Jetpack. Changed its name before release. Anyway, so they released the thing, and it sold about 1 million copies, right, after release at about a buck a piece. Then they turned the thing over into free-to-play, and it garnered like 13 million more downloads. And they say it's more profitable now as a free-to-play title because people are – I don't know what it is. Like, let's see.
I think you're purchasing like – abilities or
it's like 5 to 10 roughly 5 to 10% of the users are spending at least $1 through the in-app store, so they're like buying a little cosmetic thing or whatever,
or levels or something. I guess they're randomly generated,
so it's getting more users to experience the game, which then increases the chance of people then spending more money in your game
and therefore becoming more profitable.
Yeah,
so it's really it's not like, oh wow, this is a huge revelation, but it's more like,
yeah, you've been
this could really work if you have like a title that people want to play and you're not like, I must charge $2 for this, you know.
Yeah. I mean, every single time SOE, I mean, I guess now it's not happening anymore, but all of their games when they go from premium to free to play, you know, like EverQuest, like DC Universe Online, a week later they're like, "Our revenue's up 600%." Like,
right.
It's just, you know, that ability of giving people the possibility to play the game for free, even if it's pieces of it, like World of Warcraft does now, or I think StarCraft might have a trial as well. Stuff like that, I mean, that increases visibility, which certainly can increase the revenue that the games bring in.
Well, so, right. It's interesting. In this game, I wonder how much their sales had fallen off, because it's not as if it was doing poorly. I mean, 1 million sold, and they were top of paid apps for when it came out. Like, there was buzz around it. The game did well, and for them to be like, you know what? No, let's try this other thing.
It was the way that they positioned it was as a fan appreciation thing. Like because we've got 1 million downloads or whatever, it's doing really well, we're going to give a little back to the fans, which is kind of weird because, you know, you're giving back to the fans. They already have the game.
Right.
But
now we're giving back to
thanks to the real fans already paid
for
it.
We're going to give you something you already have.
I'm like shades of a hardware price drop. Just saying, like, thanks, guys. You already bought it, but now it's $50.
But it's not, because it went from 99 cents to free. It'd be different if it came out at $15 and then went straight to free. People like, hey, fan appreciation. Yeah.
Oh, and it's wicked fun, too. So it's like, it's not, I mean, it's a win-win. For $1, like, whatever. You know. If you don't have it already on your iPhone, pick it up.
Okay, so at Vandy Venterdan, if I'm saying that right, thoughts on Gotham City Imposters launching with so much cosmetic DLC day one? Why don't they go free to play? Any thoughts on that?
I think that if they could go free to play on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, they probably could, or they probably would.
Well, then why didn't they launch at $5 or $4? I mean, they could do that.
Sure.
I mean, they're obviously tackling the TF2 model, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what they want. They want people to get in there, play the game. I mean, you got to buy it up front.
But maybe it'll be free to play. But TF2 went that model after it went free, right? Or I guess they introduced hats and some stuff.
Beforehand.
Now, like, the marketplace exploded.
I mean,
post-free.
Yeah, Valve had the luxury of being able to roll this thing out really slowly and make sure that, you know.
And TF2 is also a great game. I don't know if Imposters.
I have yet to play it.
I have yet to play it.
But
too.
I don't know. I think it's interesting to come out with all of this stuff and flood the store, the marketplace with all this stuff for a game that, for all like in all likelihood, is going to be a flash in the pan. Just because it's so hard to pull people away from Call of Duty, Halo, Gears, or whatever your jam is. I mean, how much money are they going to be making on all this content in there?
Right.
Right.
I mean, it can't. Well, I mean, okay. It can't be. You can't be surprised that this stuff exists because the whole, you know, purpose of the game is sort of to create this character that's modeled after or inspired by or is an homage to either Batman or the Joker. So all of these cosmetic changes, you sort of kind of expected that was going to happen. And while people think that it's silly or they won't buy it, there's people who may probably make these purchases. I would assume the penetration for little purchases like this in, you know, cosmetic games might be higher on PC because they're used to that free-to-play model because it sort of is that model of buy little bits and pieces of it than it is on consoles. I don't know a lot of console gamers that are going to make these purchases personally.
Well, I think
I think you're right. Sorry.
Imposters, I think they said these are all unlockable in the game too. They're not exclusive. You don't
right,
have
but,
to pay.
But you can buy them if you want.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty common too.
Yeah.
So do you think like just thought of this. Do you think the iPhone, iTunes, and Android market with all these new downloadable games that are super cheap, do you think that's making people more comfortable with these microtransactions that could help gaming in the future? Or do you think this is something that could maybe hurt gaming in the future?
I mean, in this case, you guys raised a good point of like, you know, this game probably would be more successful if it was a $5 title and, you know, offered some really cool microtransactions too, but it's a $15 game. It is, while cannot be compared to a Call of Duty or Battlefield, it is in the same genre, same space as those games. You know, on PlayStation Network and on Xbox 360, you can get like Crysis and other big first-person shooters that we've talked about in the past too. So I think on PC, like I said, they're probably more comfortable with it because of the free-to-play marketplace being so expansive now with other big games becoming free-to-play and having these microtransactions. But console, I don't know. I don't think so.
No, I was just going to say it's the other issue that I see with it, and I know there's been some discussion about the subject matter of the game and stuff, but you're taking something that's already niche, Batman, and you're going even further niche with it. Like, you're like, okay, this is for a subset of Batman fans that just want to play in the world and they want to, you know, it's like some offshoot of the Batman universe. Like, I just don't know, you know, unless the game is just fucking awesome, like where that sweet spot's going to be for the casual Batman fan. Like, are they going to be like, ooh, yeah, that looks kind of cool. I'd like to be fake Batman.
I think the inspiration is, like you said, Team Fortress. I mean, it looks kind of like Team Fortress and has sort of that gag mentality to it.
Yeah.
There is, you're talking about Gotham City Imposters. There was some news about it, about the game being launched or when the game was first designed.
Yeah, well, they're basically talking about the concept sort of getting laughed out of the room several times. Let's see here.
The developer being Monolith, right?
Correct. Yeah, he says, the imposter's idea came from people's own desire to be like Batman, but in a multiplayer space. There could logically be only one. Batman is just like the rest of us, except with way more money and a much nobler moral code. In other words, there's nothing stopping any of us from stepping up and becoming an almost Batman, except having the will to do so.
It seems like it's from the scene in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
When he's like, I'm not wearing hockey pads.
That's really good.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what it is, right? That's who you're playing. You're playing that ancillary, you know,
which I think would be cool is if at some point then the real Joker did show up and just laid waste to you because you are just some dude in hockey. He's like, oh, hey, you're dead.
Game over.
Has a game like this ever launched on console, like this style of game? I think it'd be interesting if it's a $10 purchase and you get the game, it's basically $5, but with that you get $5 free DLC to get people into that micro because then you'll buy a few things and you'll spend your free $5 worth of gear. And you're like, oh, but I really want that last hat because I've created hat boy or whatever, right? And then you need that last piece to kind of... I don't think on console there's ever been a game like that. I think it's an interesting model. It's almost what Sony tried to do with the Welcome Back, you know, after their network problems. They're like, here's some free downloads to get you back into the store.
Sure.
Like, give me a reason to go into your store and marketplace to tinker with stuff.
Yeah, on console, I don't think that's ever happened, but it's possible. I may not be thinking of a PC example.
I think the biggest hurt, I think if the game is finds an audience, that stuff will sell or find a way to sell. As they put it, the guns killing and a distinct lack of Batman are probably its biggest sort of, you know, potential stumbling blocks for people who are looking at it and going, what is this?
I did hear some people getting frustrated that they couldn't find matches on specifically on the Xbox version. So I don't know.
Well, perfect. Well, we're going to have our matches here real quick. Right now we have our finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
Zap, finish them.
I want to say real quick about the Gotham City Impostors thing. People not finding matches, that was specific to reviewers because I think the game had just come out right now. So anyway, I wanted to update you on the Double Fine situation. I'm calling it a situation now. We're in the situation room. When we started the show, it was at $946,000. Now at the end of the show, we looked it up, over $1 million. The difference being in the time that we started the show to right now, Double Fine has earned another $96,416.
In a little less than 2 hours.
That's a pretty good...
Awesome.
Crazy. There. Over $1 million, breaking the record now for Kickstarter on any project that's ever been on Kickstarter.
Congratulations, Double Fine.
And they're going to make the most badass adventure game ever made in the history of anything.
And still 32 days left.
I know, right?
Jeff Mattis, finish him.
Well, I'm going to finish with another piece of indie news. I don't know. You may have seen some trailers and some gameplay videos floating around for a game called Hawken, which is a first-person mech combat game that looks freaking awesome. And that just got a release date. It's launching on December 12th on PC, and it will be launching under a free-to-play model. So that could be pretty cool.
I thought it was a game where you play as Stephen Hawking.
That's what I was thinking of. Like you're discovering the universe.
Or a game you can only play by moving your cheek.
Okay, well, that's going in a horrible direction. Level, I was talking about like the genius part of it.
Level one, figure out string theory. You're like, oh, crap.
Level two, write a book about it without moving.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking Spicer. Finish it.
So I had mentioned, I believe this before, but I'm super, super, super excited about this now. I have a date. It is confirmed. And everyone in Southern California, I have a date. It is confirmed. Everyone in Southern California, or if you're not here, you should plan a trip to come here for this. It's going to be that awesome. March 24th at 11:59 p.m., so essentially midnight. Saturday, March 24th at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Los Angeles. I have my first show there, not like me performing a show, like I'm putting on a show there, and we're still kicking around ideas for names. If you have one, send it in, put it in the show notes on Check News. Right now, thinking about the LAN show, the late at night show. So it's a video game talk show for gamers and people that don't play them. So basically for everyone, we have some great guests already lined up. Mega 64, almost certainly things can change. Are going to be in the house and some other really cool things. Sketches.
I love Things Can Change. They're a great group.
They're amazing. Sketches, interaction.
Stanky controller.
Prize. Stanky Dick is going to be performed live there.
It's your intro song.
That's the only jam. But no, Jeff Cannata and I are going to be doing this thing really big, and I'm super excited about it. If you haven't been to UCB, you should go. Everything they do is amazing, and this show will be amazing, and I will be talking about it more as the time comes. But I'm just so excited. I'm cool. so excited.
As it comes closer, we can tweet that out for you and whatnot.
Yeah.
My finishing move, we're on episode 99. Thank you to every single listener who's been around since the beginning and to all our new listeners. Next week is going to be awesome. We have our 100th episode. No, I will not be on mic, so you can thank God.
So it will be awesome. I won't be on mic either.
Right. We're trying to get Zav back next week, so we're working on that. Christian may be stopping by. We have Andrew Renee coming, James Stevenson. Garnett Lee will be back in the house. I know you're excited about that. And Jeff Cannata should be back on a regular schedule and in the house for that, too. Some sad news to some of you, I guess. There probably will be some drinking in that show because it is the 100th episode. Maybe we can play the 100 Club or something during that show and see if anybody survives. But once again, thank you very much. It's been a crazy ride, and I can't believe we're on episode 100. And that's it for the big show. Anybody else have anything else they forgot about that they want to tease? Or
You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/XAV.
I was going to get into all of everybody's Twitters. Christian, go
at
ahead.
Spicer, where all I do is make fun of Zav.
Cool. Sweet. And Andy, Jeff, where you at?
I'm at Jeff Mattis. That's pretty easy
and
to
that's
remember.
That's M-A-T-T-A-S, correct?
Yep, two T's, two A's, one on either side.
And I'm Del Rio Music. You can also, you know, you should be following Weekend Confirmed. Drop the E and just put the D at the end, so it's not E-D, it's just D, character limitations. Make sure you're keeping up with us on our YouTube channel, and always be sure to check out shacknews.com for the latest news. And hey, that's Weekend Confirmed. We made it through episode 99, and we are Ghost. The same line too. You get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you. Show you that I care. Show you that I listen. Show you that I'm here. I sold you all of that. I sold you everything. I gave my all to y'all. Following those are 3 rings. You know more about me anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted, everything I ever needed, but I'm still struggling, still competing for your love, your heart. And you, always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.